David Carlion used to work as a clown for Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. So it's only fitting that Carlion has written a book about the life and times of the great talking clown, Dan Rice. The book is called Dan Rice, the Most Famous Man You've Never Heard Of. One of Dan Rice's first jobs in the show business was working with Sybil, the learned pig. And pigs can be quite learned, as David Carlion explains.
Pigs are very smart animals. What you can do if you're a very skilled presenter is take a few motions and movements that an animal can do and shape them as if they are an infinite of answers to various questions, so that a paw on the ground can be both the result of adding sums, if you present it correctly. What's 2 plus 2, Sybil? And you go tap, 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 tap with the hoof, and it's 4. But it can also be tap once for yes, tap 2 for twice. Is this the smartest audience we've had in a month? Tap once for yes. Never hurts to flatter an audience. One of the stories told about Sybil was that there was a local arson, and Rice astounded the crowd by having Sybil identify the as-yet-unknown arsonist. Again, not true, but...
I was hoping that Sybil actually was able to do it, but it wasn't true.
The story is that Rice nosed around and found out the local gossip about the most likely suspect and then directed Sybil toward that person. It's possible, but it was more likely simply a public relations fiction. It does, however, point to a secret of Rice's success as he expanded into other elements of show business, and that is the story that he mingled with people at the local tavern before his performance and got the local gossip. Dan Rice learned early on to deal directly with what was on people's minds, locally and nationally. As a clown, he was a talking clown. He stood there in the ring, sometimes in makeup and costume, but increasingly in the costume of the middle class, in evening clothes, no makeup, and again, talked about what was on people's minds, whether it was the local mayor race or abolition, whether it was Bloomers or Rice's feud with Horace Greeley, the noted editor in New York.
Now, this is a very different kind of clown from the clowns that we are used to today. This is not big, wide red lips and a skull cap. This is more like a Jay Leno, I suppose, more a stand-up comedian.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that I learned early on was how different the clowning of Dan Rice, this person who I first got this glimmer of from a fellow actor, was from the clowning I had done. Very broad, very big. I must say, parenthetically, in defense of the clowning the good clowns I know do, there's lots of subtlety beyond the conventional image. Nonetheless, it's very different. Speaking, for one thing, it's very rare for a clown to speak now. So, yes, it's more like Jay Leno, like Robin Williams, live in concert, where he's standing there and riffing on whatever comes to his head for a couple hours straight. That was Dan Rice.
He did this extraordinarily well. I gather he did it better than any of his competitors at the time and became very famous, right?
Absolutely. That was really what set him apart. He was no innovator. On the other hand, he did this better than anybody else. We have no recordings, obviously, but from the testimony of every observer, those who liked Rice and those who didn't, he was supreme. He was the premier figure at combining comedy and political issues, social issues, cultural issues into one interesting combination better than any other clowns. That made him, by 1860, one of the most famous people in the United States. Part of my interest in the book is that Dan Rice was, how do I say this? He was famous, but he's part of our American history. And for him to have been forgotten is not simply the fall of fame of somebody merely popular, which is a kind of way we look at popular figures now, but rather how significant he was to the American culture and politics. And when we don't know about him, we're missing a whole chunk. There's a gap in what we know about our past.
I guess I'm curious to know a little bit more of what it was that he did. I mean, he was extraordinarily good as a clown, you say. In fact, he was so good that That he struck out on his own, I take it. Started his own circus, the Dan Rice Circus?
Yes.
Was it different from what was available at the time?
It became different. There was an increasing movement in the years leading up to the Civil War for audiences and the culture, those who had a little more money, a little more leisure time, to see themselves as refined. Dan Rice latched onto that particular movement also. Again, no innovator. He didn't start it. It was a culture-wide movement that manifested itself in various ways. But by the late 1850s, Dan Rice's circus was no longer called a circus. In his ads, the word circus was absent. It was Dan Rice's great show. And he was no clown, said the advertisements. He was America's great humorist.
Did he make a lot of money?
Oh, he made lots of money and lost lots of money. He was periodically rich or poor. He would make money. He started his own circus because he saw the money coming in, mostly because people came to see him, said, I'll start my own circus. And then within a couple of years, he lost both of those circuses and had to get funding from his former employer, who later became an enemy, and they kept feuding for years up and down the Mississippi.
Now, one of the things you've said about his circuses is that he was topical. How did he handle politics in his act?
I suspect at first it was the kind of general political commentary that you might find on late night TV now. That is the kind of thing where you're never really quite sure whether the commentator is a Republican or Democrat. Jay Leno, David Letterman, maybe they're Republican, maybe the Democrat, not clear. And I think Dan Rice started that way. But gradually, as he sensed his popularity was growing because he was being so specifically topical, he increased not only the amount of political commentary in his routine, but became more specific about it. Essentially, he became a Democrat, or was a Democrat. He came out of Pittsburgh, a strongly Democratic area. So his comments increasingly were anti-Republican as the Republican Party was forming. And then into the Civil War, Dan Rice stood there and was basically espousing Democratic positions until he started running for office himself from the circus ring.
Now, what happened to Dan Rice's fame? It must have run its course, I guess, and began to wane?
It began to wane for two reasons, two overlapping reasons. The first is that, essentially, having bet on the wrong horse in the Civil War, he had to backpedal and start elaborating fictions to deny his genuine stances in the Civil War. So you eventually got the stories then of his Northern loyalty. He had been loyal to the Union, but not to the Republican administration of the war. So eventually you got the story that he had been best friends with Lincoln and went to the White House at Lincoln's invitation so they could talk about old days, and Rice could give his old friend Abe a reading of the mood of the country. That was a fiction that was created out of Rice's need to hide his Civil War past. The difficulty, though, was that he had always stood in the ring, and whether he was telling tall tales or not, there was an essential truth to what he said, and people knew that they were getting the straight scoop from Rice. Now he was peddling fictions, and everybody knew it. So that was one reason. He simply could not stand on the same ground he had stood on before, that he was going to tell people what was on his mind and reflect what was on their minds. The other reason is that the American public was increasingly dividing performance into highbrow and lowbrow. The idea that there are some things that are essentially more artistic than other things. That's not an antique idea, an ancient one from the Romans and the Greeks as we now consider it, nor is it inevitable. It's a 19th century notion. It was created in the 19th century to help people sort of situate themselves on the social hierarchy. And so now we know when we go to the theater, our role as audiences is to sit there in quiet, appreciating the artistry before us. That wasn't the mid-19th century. The mid-19th century was rowdy and raucous, and Rice was in the middle of it, sometimes in his circus tent and sometimes in the winter in theaters. But as audiences increasingly split into what we now see as high and low, some things had to go low. And one of the candidates was circus. So Rice's rowdy, raucous interaction with a similarly rowdy audience simply was no longer considered the thing. To be a properly refined audience in 1858 could mean going to the circus where there were lots of noises and smells and political opinion. But by 1878, by 1888, to be a refined audience meant you sat there in the dark quietly, appreciatively.
What happened to Dan Rice?
He became a drunk. His fame was gone. He spent his money. But he was always reinventing himself, and he pulled himself up by his bootstraps one more time, went on a lecture tour of Texas, where he talked about the old days and found a third wife, the cattle queen of Lavaca County, and then went back to New York and tried to make a go of it as the famous old Dan Rice. And he occasionally would get an appearance at a benefit for somebody else. But he was poor and went back to live with his mother's people in New Jersey, where he still tried to get a drink. The family told me stories that he would go out to gather the chickens and bellow to the neighborhood, "Anybody in the sound of my voice, get me a drink."
David Carlyon is the author of Dan Rice, the most famous man you've never heard of.